the Redskins. Hail victory! Praise on the warpath. Fight for all we see.
Green driven back to midfield on the far side. He's got the ball up to the 45, far side 40. A seam to the 35, vaults a man to the 30. Breaks to the near side 25. Watch out to the 20. Near side 10. He's gone. Touchdown, Washington Redskins.
This is Burgundy and Gold Flashback. Now, here's Mike Richmond.
You are listening to Burgundy and Gold Flashback. With a tradition of a storied NFL franchise, the Washington Redskins stays alive. I'm Mike Richmond, author of the Redskins Encyclopedia and the Washington Redskins Football Vault. My website is redskinshistorian.com. That's redskinshistorian.com. My guest is a very popular name in the D.C. area. Most prolific tight end in Redskins history, team record 429 catches, plus 4,711 receiving yards, 33 touchdowns, and two Pro Bowl appearances in his nine-year career, all in the nation's capital. Charismatic during his playing days, now a sports media personality in the D.C. area. Chris Cooley, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you very much. It's good to be with you.
I always have enjoyed speaking to you during your playing days, interviewing you, and now it's great to speak to you in this capacity. So, by the way, I want to offer my congratulations. I understand you're a dad now.
I am. I have a little girl, Sloane Virginia Cooley. She was born September 10th, so pretty cool stuff, and it's been great. She's so much fun. It's an amazing experience.
Must be a lot of added responsibilities to you. Somebody also with such a hectic schedule.
It becomes number one very quickly.
Yes, yes.
So I don't know if you consider it an added responsibility or the most amazing part of your life.
Right, right.
That's kind of the way I look at it.
I fully understand. I have a 14-year-old daughter. So let me start out by asking you about your sports media work these days. It seems like you're everywhere regarding Redskins analysis. You're on the Monday morning Redskins Roundup, the Redskins Coaches Show with Jake Gruden, co-host of The Drive on ESPN 980, an analyst for the Redskins radio broadcast team, Redskins Showtime. Tell me, is there anything I missed?
I think you got them all, and it's actually been such a good experience for me. I would have never guessed that. I was an art major in college, and I was a year away from being a high school art teacher and a coach, which I would have loved. But I was so fortunate, and I had so many opportunities to learn and grow with things in the media as a player. And of course, I'm still growing, and I try to get better and better. But what I really try to do is understand this team and try to do it in a way where I'm watching the film and I'm looking at it as a player, as a coach, but actually looking at the film objectively, looking at the team objectively. It's tough at times to not say how a player might feel or what a player's thinking. I try not to do that as much as I can, but it's great. It keeps me close to the game. It keeps me close to football, the team, everything that's going on. And I've loved it. The transition initially was interesting. Again, like I said, it wasn't necessarily what I ever expected to do, what I ever planned on doing. But after a few months, really honestly, until training camp of this year, when I said, yeah, I'm done playing, because it took me about a year to think I'm done playing. And at that point, it was great.
Did it take you a little while to get used to more of the criticism directed toward, and in particular, guys that were teammates of yours? Did it take you a while to get into a groove with that?
Yeah, I think being critical of your friends and your teammates is the hardest possible thing to do, and that obviously is never going to go away, because my idea is that I'll probably have friends and I'll probably always be close with a lot of the guys, but I think it'll change when I haven't actually played with some of the players. And you understand the NFL rosters turn over quickly, and within 5 years I won't have probably played with anyone on this team. But that said, I feel like if I look at the film and I truly try to understand what's going on and who's right and who's wrong based on that, then I'm fair. And what I've basically said, and I've had to say this to some of the guys, and it is tough, is just tell me where I'm wrong, and I'll fix it. Tell me where I'm wrong, and I'll say I'm wrong. And that's the only way I can go about it. But my mentality with everything is to always try to be as honest as possible. And I know I offend people. I know that people, I say things that guys don't want me to say, especially about the way they're playing at times or about their career. But I can't lie about it. And I am a huge homer of the team. I am a huge fan of the team. I do sugarcoat stuff, but at the same time, basically, I've always just said what I see, and that's what I'm still trying to do.
Well, along the lines of what you're saying regarding how tough it can be, was it tough for you to dole out such harsh criticism toward Kirk Cousins following the Giants game? Because he was a teammate of yours in 2012.
Kirk's one of the guys that I've been closest with, but Kirk will be that critical of himself, in my opinion. And I want to say, yes, you're great, Kirk. You did a great job. Keep your head up. I do. I would love to say that. It would have been the easiest transition in the world for me had we won games last year. I mean, my first year out of the team is a 3-13 year where what am I going to say positive? I'm going to do a poor job. I won't be taken seriously if I'm trying to be positive out of everything that I say. And I've tried to spin it. I've tried to do things where it isn't negative. It's just critical. And that, to me, is not a problem. If you're critically analyzing what they're doing, then that's real media. And that's what I'm getting paid to do. And to do different would be doing the fans, doing the people that listen to my shows a disservice.
And you would be seen as too much of a homer. I know you are pulling for the Redskins, but the fans, like you say, would not take you seriously enough. Right now, as we speak, the Redskins are 1-3. They're coming off that disastrous 45-14 loss to the Giants last week, and they're looking ahead to Monday night's game against the Super Bowl champion Seahawks. I want to ask you, of course, nobody expected that 45-14 loss, such a wide margin, and everybody's who pulls for the Redskins is disappointed at it, but what were we to expect at this point? I mean, the Redskins are coming off a 3-13 season, first-year head coach, so where were they supposed to be at this point?
Well, no one knows where you're supposed to be. That's the beauty of the NFL. The parity of talent in the league changes, and you don't know what to expect. I would have expected them to be closer to 2-2. I would have expected them to beat Houston, which is a team that I think they should have beaten. I'm not blown away by the talent of the New York Giants, especially not to the extent of a 45-10 loss. I think that was embarrassing. I think it was, to some extent, a lack of effort by our team, or maybe just a lack of expectation of what they were going to see. But this is a turning point for this team, or potentially can be a turning point for this team, because you're going to turn around as a group of players and coaches and look directly at yourself and say, what did we do wrong? Because we were way wrong. How do we fix this? What is it going to take to fix this? And then look ahead and say, this is what we have to do to win football games. And if they can take this as a turning point, 1-3 isn't death in the NFL. It's not great, but if they can take this, practice in another way, work in another way, and figure out a way to beat Seattle, and you maybe look ahead and say, this is now a formula for what we need to do. Because as a new coach, you're developing a new formula. You're developing a new routine with your players. Players are looking at new coaches and saying, do I trust him? How do I trust him? Same as coaches. And so when you lose and when it's this tough, you really do find out what kind of character everyone on your team has. And if the team has the character that I think it has, that they think it has, then they find a way to win a football game against Seattle in an extremely tough spot on Monday night. You know as well as I do, we're terrible in prime time, so maybe you take this and you turn it from here. And I think that's what you hope for. As far as what you expect from this group, I don't know. Because I think our fans' expectations are being lowered, and I hate that. But I was at the game, and I had friends at the game, and basically what I took after that game was fans weren't even that mad. It wasn't an aggravation. It was just like a disappointed mother, basically. Well, I'm like, Seth, cheer again. But it wasn't this anger. 45-10 should be anger.
I think it was kind of like a stoic type of feeling on the part of the fans. It's kind of like, well, we've seen this before. we had high hopes.
Like we've already been humbled, so we'll just move on.
Right, right. Regarding Cousins, he threw four picks in that Giants game after an excellent performance against the Eagles, although he came up short at the end of that game. But he throws four interceptions in that Giants game. Just a terrible, terrible second half. What does he need to do to turn things around?
Well, he's got to stop thinking so much about everything going on around him. He's got to stop guessing. He's got to stop trying to force throws. He's got to go back to what he does as if he were just coming off the bench. Read the defense the way it should be read. Make the throw you should make. If it has to be the check down, then it has to be the check down. And I think at times he was guessing who was premier as far as his one receiver. He wasn't playing out covered with his eyes. He wasn't reading defenses. To me, he has this idea of I have to win games to keep this job. I have to get this team to win. And he forced it as a quarterback. But you just can't do that. But ultimately, it's a sixth start. He's basically a rookie, and that's a learning experience for a young quarterback, for a rookie quarterback, for this league. But it isn't Michigan State. It isn't college. I can't just throw the ball around. It's not the backyard. I have to go through my reads, my progressions. I have to understand the defense. He's really capable of doing that. He's really smart. He's accurate on the field. But I mean, he can fix it. This doesn't panic me with Kirk Cousins. I don't look at that game and say, that's who he is. Those four picks are indicative of who Kirk Cousins really is. I think he's a better player than that. I just think he has to change his mindset back to, what's my routine pre-snap, what's my routine throughout the play, and let me follow that exactly as it is.
Okay, well, it's been great hearing your thoughts thus far about the current state of the Redskins, although we don't like the fact that they're 1-3 right now, but we're hoping for better. I want to talk to you more about your memorable career, but right now we need to go to break. Here's This Week in Redskins History.
Hey, it's Mike Richmond, the official Redskins historian and author of the Washington Redskins Football Vault and the Redskins Encyclopedia. From the pages of my books comes This Week in Redskins History. When it comes to classics at RFK Stadium, this one easily fit the bill. On October 2nd, 1983, the Redskins fought back from a 15-point deficit with about 7 minutes left to beat the Raiders 37-35. Quarterback Joe Theismann, who had a spectacular day with 23 of 39 passing and a career-high 417 yards, threw two TDs during the comeback, including a six-yarder to diving wingback Joe Washington to complete the miracle finish. The two teams combined for nearly 900 yards of offense in a game touted as a possible preview to the Super Bowl. Sure enough, they collided again that season in Super Bowl 18, with the Raiders avenging the earlier loss 38-9. For more on Redskins history, check out my website at RedskinsHistorian.com. That's RedskinsHistorian.com. I'm Mike Richmond for This Week in Redskins History.
Welcome back to Burgundy and Gold Flashback. I'm Redskins historian Mike Richmond, here with the Redskins record holder for receptions for a tight end, now a multidimensional sports media man. Chris Cooley, thanks again for coming on the show.
You know what? It is great. I appreciate you having me again. You do a great job, man.
Thank you very much. You had a wonderful career in the NFL, all nine seasons with the Redskins, 2004 to 2012. And I should say you were drafted in the third round by the Skins in 2004. So nothing is really a guarantee at that point. So I think you really exceeded a lot of expectations. And in particular, you seem to have an amazing knack for getting open. I know you were faster than a lot of people really gave you credit for, but where did that stem from, your ability to get open on so many occasions?
I always prided myself on understanding what defenses did, understanding what defenses actually were, knowing the scheme, being able to be a little bit creative within the scheme. At times, that's tough as a player, especially as a receiver, to have some creativity in what you do. But I also understood the risk of, if you're right, then it's okay. And I was willing to take that risk at times, and I was willing to make the most of my opportunities, which I was extremely fortunate to get here in D.C.
What was your most memorable moment as a Redskin? You played on three playoff teams, 2005, 2007, and 2012. And let me just take a stab at one particular game, and you tell me if I'm off target or whatever. The 35-7 Sunday night win over the Cowboys in 2005, you had three touchdown catches that game?
That's something that I'll absolutely never forget. I mean, that was so special for me, for my career, in a big game that we had to win to play like that. it was incredible, and I have a lot of memories that I'll never forget that aren't necessarily on the field, that are with guys in the locker room, that are on plane rides home. Lots of them that I'm not going to tell you, but yeah, as a player, as a moment in my career, that's probably one thing that I would be so proud to tell my family of one thing I did as a player.
And your coach at the time was the legendary Redskins coach Joe Gibbs. Of the three coaches that you played for, what in particular did you learn from Joe Gibbs?
Right. The thing I learned most from Joe, both on and off the field, is that it's about his players, and it's about his care for his players and his understanding of who they are, and letting them be the person and the player that they really are, and trying to help them be the best person and player that they are. And everyone's different, and Joe knew that, and Joe worked with a lot of characters. But he's willing to let that personality shine and let the idea and the creativeness of the player shine. It wasn't about Joe. It wasn't about his scheme. It wasn't about what he was able to, it was about the players. And that was the most important thing to me. And you saw that care and love for his guys off the field. I've seen that from Joe after he was done coaching. He was just truly a person that cared about the people around him and also understood and learned about the people around him. And I think that's important to know about Joe.
Right. A lot of people have said that about Joe Gibbs, and I've seen it myself and learned about it, that he loves surrounding himself with really good people, whether on the executive level or players, like you're saying, really, really good people who will make good decisions and also follow through on his decisions. So I'm sure that you saw a lot of that.
Yeah, I think without question. And back to just how much he cared. You see it in his eyes. Joe would call you in the office and you'd sit down and talk to him. It wasn't that he was super talkative. At times he was even somewhat introverted to the players. But you could see in his eyes, you can see you could hear it in the tone of his voice, that this guy actually really cares about me. I think because of that, the players that played for him would run through a wall for Joe.
The documentary that was just released, Sean Taylor, Football Life, I know you were part of that, and I was wondering if you could just tell me, did that portray Sean Taylor accurately? Your comment, or one of your comments in the production was, first game in the NFL, he was the best player on the field, but tell me, was that an accurate depiction of Sean Taylor?
I got to tell you that I need to watch the documentary, so it's on my DVR. I'll get to watching it, but what I said about him being the best player on the field was exactly what I saw at that time. And I spent some time with Sean before the season started, and we went to the rookie orientation together, and then he left, and we're back together. But he was a really unique person. Sean was such a smart guy, such a good guy. I remember being in Buffalo, or playing, sorry, it was the Hall of Fame game. We were playing Indianapolis, actually. I don't know why I came up with Buffalo, but I was not playing until the second half because at that time I wasn't starting. I remember watching the first half and watching Sean on the field thinking, man, if I could be anything half of what he's doing out there, that's great. But just seeing the confidence that he had as a rookie that I didn't have really made me look up to him.
Do you think that he would have been a first ballot Hall of Famer if he had continued with the progression that he was on, the Pro Bowl years and just his talent and skills on the field? Could you say first ballot Hall of Famer?
I think it's tough to just say, throw out Hall of Fame, and I don't want to discredit what Sean was as a player, and I think there was definitely a possibility that he could have been that. He would have had to continue to get better and evolve, and I think a lot of it goes into what the team was. You know, it's crazy because since Sean, that position's still always been up in the air. It's almost eerie that you can't fill that spot that he played. But as far as the potential with the ability that he had, there's nothing that would have stopped him from it. I mean, nothing in my opinion. He loved football. He was amazing to watch play. You know, we would have practice and Sean would run the scout team for the offense. Like, he'd run defensive scout team I asked him why he was doing that, and he said, because I want to see your route concepts and schemes and be able to react to them. And everyone on offense hated it because Sean was out there hitting you, and you think, stop, man. But his overall understanding, his want to get better, plus his already amazing skills, it could have been anything he wanted to be.
And, of course, right now you're involved in RedskinsFacts.com. You're on the steering committee of that organization, which was formed by the Redskins. In the face of all these critics who want the name changed, they're saying that the nickname is offensive, derogatory toward Native Americans. Let me ask you, what is driving you to be part of that organization, and also your staunch defense of the nickname? You've come out on nationally televised shows on ESPN, but why have you taken this stance?
Well, initially, it was because I wanted to be able to talk about it. I have a radio show, I'm doing things in the media, and I wanted to be able to speak logically about it and understand it, or try to understand it. And I also understood that I was proud to be a Washington Redskin. I was proud of the team that I played for, about the legacy, about what the team stands for. The reason I stayed here and started doing a bunch of media and being around the park was because I didn't want to leave my friends. I didn't want to leave our owner. Well, there's a lot of respect for this team, at least for me, and I'm proud to be a Redskin. So I started going and visiting different reservations, and I started going and talking to Native Americans, and I have this, you have to understand that everyone has an opinion, and you have to understand that anything can be wrong in someone's eyes. And so I want to have an open mind when I do this, but I've visited with Natives from over 20 tribes now at this point. I haven't had anyone tell me that our team offends them. The name and the logo and the imagery of our team offends them in any way. Basically, what I am understanding is that they have so many bigger issues with their people and with their reservations and with what they have going on in their life that has never come up. It's never been offensive. This is at no point an issue. And so it makes me question like where it becomes an issue and why, and then who's actually saying it is. And at least for me, the people that I've talked to, it hasn't been. And so that's why I've been a defender of what the name is. If I went to reservations and they said, hey, man, you're wrong, then I'm wrong. But so far, it's only been amazing people who are really proud of their culture and proud of who they are and what they stand for that are telling me, we're proud that the team's the Redskins. We don't want it to disappear.
So then, do you think that the polls, which say that it's a minority of Native Americans or a minority of people who think the nickname is offensive, do you think then the polls are accurate based on what you're learning on these reservations?
I think the polls are, based on what I'm learning on the reservations, no, the polls are not accurate. They're less than accurate. So if it was to say 90%, it's 95%, or 98%, based on what I'm doing. And it's not that I've just went with the team. I went by myself. I have lots of friends. That's what it is. And yeah, I do understand that when people are offended, you have to be sensitive to that issue, and you have to try to understand where they're coming from as well. But people are offended of anything. In our country today, everything offends someone. And so I think it's based on this idea that, and we're a democracy, and we're a country where what the majority of people believe is right. When someone's offended by something, it's, you do understand, and you do try to be sensitive to that, but you also just don't change your life for that.
Right, right. Well, like you, I hope this controversy does come to an end at some point, hopefully in the near future. I know that it's in legal circles right now, but I also hope it ends sometime in the court of public opinion. But I want to tell you that I really love this conversation, and I'm sure that we'll cross paths pretty soon at FedEx, Redskins Park, or elsewhere. And so thank you very much again for coming on the show.
No, I really appreciate your time, and I thank you for having me.
And I want to offer many thanks to my audience for listening to Burgundy and Gold Flashback, and thanks to my producer, Mike Engel, for his work running the board. I'm Mike Richmond. My website is RedskinsHistorian.com. That's RedskinsHistorian.com. For now, hail to the Redskins.